I've been noticing that other podcasts I listen to these have these things called sponsors.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because today's episode of Superhero Speak is actually brought to you by Blueberry.com.
Yeah, that's a good thing, right?
Yes, it seems everyone and their mother has podcasts nowadays.
Don't get me started on my mom's podcast.
Well, we'll leave that discussion for later, John. But as a podcaster, what is a crucial first step?
Does it have to do with necromancy?
I do seem to recall a deal with a certain Dark Lord.
No, wait, hold on. You need hosting, guys. And luckily, Blueberry offers a great hosting option.
That's cool, but for a podcast, you need things like unlimited downloads and optimization for iTunes.
They have that.
Okay, but what's the catch? Do I need to sell my firstborn, please?
No. There's no contract. You can cancel any time. Plus, really great free technical support.
Okay, that's all well and good. But what about analytics, like premium podcast statistics and lots of information about the people downloading your episodes?
Oh, they got that covered too.
Sweet, but what if you already have a hosting plan? Can you still get the statistics?
Hold up, Dave. I've got this one. John, I heard about a WordPress plugin for Blueberry to stream your podcast so you can sign up for just the premium statistics separately.
Ben, you are correct. And right now, for listeners of Superhero Speak, we have a great deal for you. When you sign up for either the hosting plan or the premium statistics and use the promo code Superhero Speak, you'll get a month for free.
Wow, that sounds like an amazing deal.
And no human sacrifice needed at all. Are you sure about this?
Nope. So if you're planning on starting a podcast, and who isn't nowadays, head on over to blueberry.com. That's BlueBrry.com. And use the promo code SuperheroSpeak and get a month free. Don't miss out on this amazing deal.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event, able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave. And this week I have a very special guest with me, Nicholas Wetland from Broken Icon Comics.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you doing?
Doing real good, man. Excited to be here, I appreciate it.
Ah, no problem. And you were here this week to talk about your comic G-Raver, which you're the artist on. Why don't you tell the fans a little bit about the comic?
G-Raver is a pretty fun comic so far. We've got a professional wrestler named Brandon Graver. It's actually based off a real wrestler in Pennsylvania. And he doubles as what's called a cleanser. And he's the guy that gets all the dirty jobs. He's got to kill all the vampires and ghosts and deal with even meaner monsters, demons, and people trying to break into the earth plane. And the comic basically follows him as he learns to accept this life as a cleanser and balances it with his other life as a normal man and a professional wrestler.
Cool. Yeah, I actually had an opportunity to read, I guess, the preview copy, which it's interesting because it comes off definitely as you described. You know, the first issue is he's hunting a vampire, and it was really well done. My question is, what was the inspiration behind this? Was this something that Brandon wanted to do, or is this something you guys thought of? Like, where how to get started?
You know, I'm a little bit foggy on some of this, but I do know that the masterminds behind this are Brandon and Eric, and those two guys, when they get together on something and come up with these ideas, it's pretty crazy. I do know Brandon has a great affinity for horror movies and, you know, monsters and horror of all types, and this story naturally lended itself to that. So together they come up with interesting stories for them to put into the book, and it's definitely a collaborative effort on that whole thing.
Okay, cool. So you're the artist on the book. Actually, first question I have for you, it was something that struck me interesting when I was looking through the art on the book. Obviously, Brandon's a wrestler, and he's got a lot of tattoos on him, and he does in the book. Does that make it difficult to, you know, make sure the tattoos are positioned correctly every time you draw and those kinds of things?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I do spend a lot of time on those tattoos, and there are times where sometimes it'll take two or three passes where I'll notice I forgot one or one's in a weird place or something, but I always have them in the front of my mind. And at the very beginning of this project, I literally have a folder on my computer that's nothing but JPEGs of a bunch of pictures of Brandon's body so that I have all of his placements correct.
Yeah, that's why Batman doesn't have any tattoos.
Yeah, and you'll also notice about halfway through the book, I think we stuck him in a hoodie, so there's not nearly as many tattoos exposed, and that's definitely deliberate.
Yes. So let's back up a little bit and talk a little bit about you. How did you get started drawing?
You know, drawing's one of those things that I've done my whole life, literally ever since I was a kid. I know a lot of people say that, but it's always been one of those things where no matter what I was pursuing in my life, what hobby, career, whatever, I've always kept up on my drawing. It's what I've always enjoyed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when I decided on this career path, you know, trying to really do comic books seriously, I just really focused on studying fundamentals and, you know, reading up on the great artists and kind of looking at how they did things. And I'm very much a self-taught person, thanks to the internet, you know, able to get master classes from the masters and never leave my living room. So
that's cool. So, were you always into comics then as a kid?
Oh yeah, man. Some of the earliest pictures of me are as a little toddler holding my Spider-Man Halloween buckets going around trick-or-treating.
Cool.
Comic books have literally been a part of my life since I was an infant.
Cool, that's the best way to be. So who were some of your favorite artists then growing up?
You know, just my age, I'm very much a child of the late 80s and 90s as far as comic books are concerned. I really loved a lot of the Marvel stuff. Keown, McFarlane, a lot of the guys that went and made Image are a lot of my fondest influences. Dave Finch especially is one of my favorites. Mark Silvestri was always one of my, I always consider him as like my quintessential classic artist. It's whenever I'm in trouble, I'm like, what would Mark Silvestri do?
Cool. Get that on a t-shirt.
Yep.
What would Mark do?
Exactly. Because man, his lines are just beautiful.
Yes. No, cool. I mean, it sounds like we have a very similar background with influences there. I mean, McFarlane's always been, I think, one of my favorite artists growing up.
Yeah, I was just having a conversation with a buddy of mine about him the other day, you know, because some people will dog on him a little bit, and they'll say, oh, he's really not that good. And I'll say, you know, when it comes down to art like McFarlane, it doesn't matter that it's good. You look at it and there's an energy, there's a vibrancy and a life to those lines that no one else can match. And that's why his art is so exciting.
Yeah. I also think it comes back to, when you're looking through the comic book rack and you've got, you know, 100, 200 comic books right in front of you, you're going to gravitate to what stands out to you, you know, and he definitely
exactly.
stands out, you know, he's not, you know, there's a definite, he has a definite style all his own. You know, there's a mixture
absolutely.
Of like anime. There's a mixture of, high detail, very cartoonish. You know, like when he draws regular people, I always felt they feel very cartoonish, but when he draws a superhero, there's like a hyper realism to them, you know?
Absolutely. I always thought he distorted stuff in such a way that just made everything look so kinetic. And you're right. It does. It jumps right off the page.
Yes. Cool. So was there, support from the family growing up to be an artist?
Absolutely. Cool. My parents both were very supportive of all my artistic endeavors. I'm sure I was a very difficult child, and you know, art is always what I've wanted to do. I knew it from a very young age. I spent a good decade doing music and did that successfully, and now I'm hoping to do the same thing here.
Cool. So what did you play?
I played bass guitar.
Oh, cool. Just like, James.
Yep. Yeah, I'm actually excited to sit and have a little jam with James. It'll be fun.
Oh, cool. That must be a fun aspect. I still play drums, but I'm not in a band currently, and, I've done that for many years, and I know that it's a hard, it's a hard life if you want to try to do it.
Yeah, if you go out touring and on the road, it's a very hard life, and that was a lesson I had to learn by doing.
Yes. Yeah, no one can explain it to you. You just have to try it. And take all the fun that goes with it.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. So then how'd you get hooked up with Broken Icon?
You know, it was really kind of serendipity on that one. They were a pretty fresh upstart. They only had a couple titles under their belt at the time, and I found them on a forum. In fact, I think it might have even been Digital Webbing, and I responded to one of Eric's posts, and he enjoyed the artwork. My first stint with those guys was back in 2010, and I did some of the web comics that they used to put up once a week.
Oh, okay,
so,
cool.
So that was kind of my very first start with those guys, just doing something real small. But when I got in touch with Eric here recently, and he had G-Raver, we talked about it, and I was interested right away, and we pretty much hit the ground running.
Cool. Is that is that something you're also interested in, the like the vampires and that kind of thing, and the hunter storylines?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's definitely a market for that stuff right now, but even more so the G-Raver story especially. It really starts us off in that kind of world, but it goes much deeper, and there's definitely an interesting story behind the stuff that's going on there that gets revealed as time goes. I was also very interested in that it was actually based on a person. Brandon's a real guy. You know, right. I can go watch videos of him. I can kind of see his personality, and that really kind of helps me draw him, both in getting his facial features and kind of the way he reacts to things correct, but also a little bit in the way he kind of jumps around and does all his crazy wrestling moves.
Cool. Yeah, and that's actually something I was wanted to ask. Like, when it comes to writing the book, and I know that Eric is the writer on the book, but is it a collaboration between him and Brandon, or does he write something and then Brandon approves it or goes, oh, I don't really talk that way, do I?
You know, I'm not 100% sure on how they go back and forth on that.
Okay. But Brandon's an artist as well, right? Because he did an alternate cover for it.
Brandon is a phenomenal artist, both on with traditional media and as a tattoo artist. He's always posting new ink he's doing, and he is amazing. In fact, there's been a few times I've joked with him about being intimidated drawing his book because he's such a fantastic artist himself.
Cool. And so that, I guess, no offense to you, but then I would need to ask, why doesn't he draw his own book?
You know, I honestly have no idea. But maybe time constraints? I guess I don't know.
Okay.
My job is constantly in jeopardy, though, because I imagine he could probably pretty capably pick it up if he wanted to.
Cool. You know, I don't know. I think it definitely, I enjoyed the art in this book. You know, there's a definite quality to it that I liked. In fact, actually, one of the things I was going to mention is there's the one beat in the book where the vampire is setting a place for them to meet, you know, and there's the cross image of G. Raver's face on one half and the vampire's face on the other half. And I have a feeling that was very telling about the character, that beat.
Yeah, that was a fun frame. You get so few chances to do a frame like that, but yeah, that whole thing was the setup for his big finger that he gives the vampire there, and I really wanted to try to spend as much time looking at G. Raver's eyes as possible.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, but it's just, you know, the contrast between him and the vampire where, like, they have similar facial features, but obviously they're not the same person. You know, I kind of felt like, is this a telling of a yin and yang of his personality kind of moment in the book?
Oh, yeah, very much could be. I suppose there's a few different ways to read into that.
Okay. And so I didn't get a feeling from this book that he himself has any special powers. Is that, you know, does he, or is it just he happens to be a hunter?
At first, he relies on his purely human instincts and powers. At the beginning, he really doesn't have any superpowers, and then some mystical and supernatural things will develop as the story goes on.
Okay, cool. Right, because the preview copy ends with him fighting that vampire, and it actually wasn't even finished being colored yet.
Right, you got one that doesn't even have all the colors.
Yes. Yeah, it was funny. I have to admit, when I was reading it, and I got to that page, I'm like, did they do a flashback where it's not colored or something? And I'm like, oh, no, it's just continuing, just isn't finished yet. Okay.
And that must have got sent a while ago.
Actually, no.
Oh, Eric. Eric's dropping the ball. You should have got colors. I apologize for that.
Ah, no problem. Have you done anything outside of Broken Icon?
As far as comic books go, nope. This is going to be my first real publication. Okay. I've done a lot of graphic arts and, been published in other mediums. My other job is working as a traditional graphic artist doing things like websites and advertising and such. So I'm definitely familiar with publishing, but this will kind of be my first time in the forefront as an actual producer.
Cool. Yeah. No, I actually work for an advertising company in my day job too. So,
So you know how it goes sometimes then.
Yes.
Not the most glamorous work, but it
it's not like Mad Men.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you guys are launching, when are you launching the book?
The book is releasing this Halloween.
Oh, okay, cool. And, how many issues do you plan to have with the launch?
The launch will be a graphic novel compiling the first 6 chapters. So it's going to be around 60 pages.
Oh, okay, cool. Cool. And do you have what is the release plan? Is it going to be on Comixology? Is it just going to be at cons?
I'm pretty sure they're going to try to blast this one on all their outlets. I think they are going to hit Comixology, Amazon. I think there's a couple outlets they have, but I know those are the big ones.
Cool.
And I don't want to speak out of turn, but I'm pretty sure he was even going to try to get it locally in some shops, too. So he definitely feels like there's a strong market for it, and some of the pre-sales have definitely been good, so we're really hopeful.
And he being Eric or Brandon?
Eric.
Oh, okay.
Eric is the comic book slinger, man. He's the consummate promoter and salesman. He's a madman.
He is a madman. Oh, okay. Because I was looking at the bios here, and so Brandon is from Philadelphia.
Yep.
Okay.
And I know Altoona, does that sound familiar?
Yes.
I know he spends a lot of the time around there and kind of bases out around that area.
Oh, okay, cool. So, So for our home-based listeners, definitely should be checking this book out.
You got the one guy in Iowa, on your interview, is what happens. So yes. I'm filling in the best I can.
Yes, for those who are wondering, I'm gonna state it. So originally this was supposed to be an interview with all three, Brandon, Eric, and Nicholas. And Brandon didn't answer his phone, and Nicholas's Wi-Fi kept cutting in and out, and we couldn't get a good recording with him. So we ended up with Nick, but I think we got the best of the three.
I appreciate that, man.
I'm sure
Eric's facepalming right now. It'll be all right.
So you guys are doing a TriCon this weekend?
Yes. Yep. It's been a long build up, and it's finally here. I know Eric has just been pulling his hair out because boy, those guys really put a lot of work into putting this thing together.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. James was telling me about the convention a little while ago, and he was very excited for it. And I would go if I lived in the area.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I can't afford a hotel room right now. So.
That's the way it goes. I'd probably be sleeping in my car if they weren't providing me hotel rooms.
Exactly.
So I know where you're coming from.
Yeah, but it sounds like a lot of fun. From my understanding, it's going to be a fairly big show. But it's going to be concentrating mainly on the art and the comic book side of things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the guest list and see where their tables are laid out, it is just nothing but some just great comic book artists and writers just up and down the board.
Cool. I can't think of it. Oh my God, I just drew a blank. Steve Scott going to be there?
Oh, I wouldn't know 100% everyone that's going to be there. I know some of the names that are on there that I'm excited to hang out with again.
Yeah, like?
Billy Tucci. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to talk with that guy, but he's one of those rare kinds of eccentric that, boy, if you can have even one conversation with that guy, it's worth it.
Yeah, actually, he does a small convention I work every year up here called New York. It used to be the Big Apple Con, and then Big Apple Con was bought by Wizard. And then what does he call it now? A New York Comic Book Marketplace. And Billy does that every year. So yeah.
Nice.
Yes, he is definitely eccentric is the way to put it.
Yeah. But definitely one of those mad genius artists where sometimes I'm standing there looking at that work and I'm just like, wow. I've always got people to look up to and chase after as far as artists go, so that's good.
Yeah. And Tri-State Con is Virginia?
Huntington, West Virginia.
Huntington, West Virginia.
At the Big Sandy Superstore Arena.
Yes. And so anyone who is in the area, you guys should definitely check that out this weekend. Mick Foley's going to be there.
Yes, cool. Mick Foley is the headliner, and he is going to be there in the flesh.
Cool. Yeah.
Hanging out, talking about some of his writing, some of his other stuff, and Eric's had a few conversations with him, and it sounds like it's going to be a real fun time with him.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, you guys are in the area. Check this show out. You know, anything. Oh, Gail Simone. Come on, guys. Gail Simone's going to be there. Yep. Come on. You got to get in line now. Buy your tickets. Go to tristatecon.net. Buy your tickets now. Billy Tucci, Daniel Way. Oh, come on. It's going to be a great show. So,
yeah, for what they're doing over there, man, they've got a great guest list, and it looks like everything's well organized. I'm really excited. I love cons of this size. I feel like they're big enough to draw the crowds and get some good artists in there, but they're small enough that it can still be kind of personal, and you get that kind of old school con feel, you know, back when everyone and their mother didn't go and it was really for the nerds.
Yeah, it's funny because I started really going to cons in 2000. And even back then, you know, they were still fairly small. And ever since, you know, Spider-Man and the X-Men movies blew up, they became more and more media events. And so it's nice when you can find, you know, smaller cons that aren't concentrating on bringing in celebrities. Because again, they're really about the comic books, you know.
Absolutely. And they're about the comic book community, and that's really the best part about the whole thing.
Yes, yes. Because that's one of the things the norms don't get.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that we are a community, you know, and there is something about talking to the artists and meeting the writers and, you know, talking about our collection with somebody else, you know, and not standing in line for 2 hours to get, you know, let's say, Lou Ferrigno's autograph, you know.
Sure, yeah, the drive-through autograph. Yeah, no, it's definitely good, because there is a kinship there, and it's nice when you can get some like-minded people, and you suddenly don't feel so ashamed anymore, you know, those huge boxes, they become this beaming source of pride, you know.
Yes, exactly. I try to explain that to my wife, and she doesn't understand.
Some people will never get it, but the ones that do, they'll never lose it, man. It's lifelong.
Yes. She's always like, you know, these things are taking up space. I'm like, no, they're not.
Yeah, this is valuable space. This is their space. You got to understand that. It belongs to them.
Yes. Are you working on anything with Broken Icon besides G-Raver, or is it just G-Raver right now?
Right now, officially, it's just G-Raver. I have been kicking around a sci-fi book with a buddy of mine, and I've been talking to Eric about it. Nothing's official, but I'm hopeful that that's going to be an upcoming Broken Icon title as well.
Cool. You care to share any of it, or are you just going to...
Oh, yeah, no. We've got this girl named Rigel Rain, and she's a little bit space pirate, I guess, a little bit tank girl, you know, and she's... kind of doing the salvage and pirate thing, and she ends up going down a rabbit hole learning a little bit about her past and the way the general Imperium works in the space that she flies in, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's character driven, but it's got a lot of action, and it should be fun. We wanted a strong, spunky female lead, and I think we've really got something here.
Cool. Yeah, I dig Tank Girl, so I'll definitely check that out.
Awesome.
So, you know, I'm going to... You know, we have plenty of time here, and the other guys flaked out on us.
All right.
And something hit this weekend. Actually, two big news items hit this weekend, and if you don't mind, let's talk about them a little bit. Because this is going to be this week's episode, and I want to make sure that these are mentioned on air. Let's start with Zack Snyder.
Okay.
And him coming out and essentially lambasting the Marvel movies. Even though he is working on a Marvel title the X-Men movies, he basically was saying the reason that the X-Men movies aren't doing as well as the Marvel movies is because they have the big names. You know, if they have Iron Man, if we had Iron Man, we'd be doing as well as them.
Sure.
And it's been all over the internet. And what do you think about that?
You know, it's hard to know what to think about that because it feels like there's a little bit of that kind of going back and forth. But to be completely honest, my gut feeling is I think a lot of these writers and directors working on the DC titles, they have to be getting tons and tons of pressure from the fans, from the studios, mm-hmm. be like, every single person's going to be asking them, how come these aren't like the Marvel movies? How come these aren't pulling in the $1 billion ticket sales, you know? And what are they going to say? You know, well, right. I tried to make the best damn movie I could, you know, can you do better, I guess? And that some of that's going to turn outward, because it wasn't just Zack Snyder. There was people blowing a bunch of quotes out of proportion that, like, David Goyer and a couple of them other guys were saying about some script writing, and it was exactly the same stuff. They were kind of dogging on the Marvel stuff just a little bit while they're working on the DC stuff, and it's like, you know, I feel like it's healthy competition, and if people are getting frustrated, then that means someone is being successful. So I guess let's look and see who those guys are and what they're doing.
Oh, you know what? Hey, I'm sorry. I said Zack Snyder. I meant Bryan Singer came out and said this.
Oh. And is right. is he still doing that project?
He was talking about someone was interviewing him about Days of Future Past. And that's what he was, you know, he was defending the X-Men movies not doing as well as the other Marvel movies because they don't have Iron Man.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That
Yeah, no,
that
that's
completely
all good.
That completely changes the tone of what I just said.
Yeah.
Right. So, and that was the whole thing I was going to say is traditionally it's Marvel versus DC. This was because they're two different studios. You had Marvel versus Marvel.
Sure, absolutely. But yeah, no, that does cast a different light. And you know, I'd have to say in that situation, I'll just come out on record and say that I never thought Bryan Singer was a very good X-Men director to begin with. And I think they should have gave that to someone that could handle it a little bit better. I think he's had just fine names in the X-Men. You know, when people list Marvel comics, you know, two names come to mind, Spider-Man and X-Men. So like, if you screw one of those up, then I don't know what to tell you.
Right, right. Yeah. And that was the thing, my other co-host, Ben and I were talking about this past week is he was given what was the biggest name in Marvel Comics at the time. Well, the two biggest names were X-Men and Spider-Man and he screwed it up.
Yeah, that exactly.
Like Iron Man was on the verge of being canceled before the movies came out. You know, it had always been because he was becoming a second stringer, you know, and
that does come out as a pretty weak defense because Iron Man is definitely one of their seminal characters. There's no doubt, but I guarantee that if you went to just a straight street poll and asked people which ones were more well known, it would be X-Men by a long shot.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, Brian, just make a better movie and stop complaining.
Yes, exactly. I second that motion.
And then what was the other news item? Oh, Ant-Man.
Oh, I was just reading about that.
Yes, I can't think of his name. Hold on a second. Edgar Wright leaves Ant-Man. I mean, this is something we've heard about going back. It feels like at least 3 years now. Edgar Wright.
Even longer than that.
Right, right. But Edgar Wright really wanted to do the Ant-Man movie. He wrote a script he was proud of. He's done screen tests and, you know, kept doing rewrites on the script, but he had an idea that he wanted to follow. They began casting and now Edgar Wright has walked away from the project. And what's interesting about it is we're not hearing a straight story from either Marvel or Edgar Wright's camp at this point. Some people are saying he walked away. Other people are saying he was fired. So,
yeah, and the article I read, and I wish I knew offhand where I read this, but I had read that he walked away and that it was over creative differences. It's like they were having trouble coming together on the vision of this thing.
Yeah, I mean, and that
could... And I'm sure conflicting reports on this are probably going to be pretty common, especially if it was heated in the inner circle. We might never know exactly what happened.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the one rumor is they brought in two other screenwriters to rewrite the script, behind his back, basically, and he got frustrated at that, and that's when he left. I don't know how true that it is. That was something I read on Cinema Blend, and half of the stuff I read on there ends up being false.
Yeah, I guess you never know, but something like that is entirely possible, because, just being an artist myself, and if you get attached to something and you get personally invested in it, you know, you got people coming in and sticking their fingers in it, changing stuff around, it can be frustrating. And I imagine that project had to be, you know, fraught with hardship from the beginning, just because it's a lesser known character. You know, it's a lot harder of a slate to work with when you're trying to bring something out of obscurity like that. I mean, it's not obscure for us hardcore people, but, you know, the average person doesn't know who Ant-Man is, and nor do they care, and I'm sure that's probably where a lot of the friction was coming.
Yeah.
A lot of those scripts, they get dumbed down. You know, they're real intelligent at first, and then those secondary writers come in and just start hacking out any subtext and just turn it into drivel.
Right, right. Right, and also going with the fact that they were going with the Scott Lang version versus the Hank Pym, you know, so
right.
So it's an even lesser known incarnation of the character. And I've been wondering for a long time, it just feels like we saw that test footage, I think 2 years ago from Comic-Con, and it just feels like they've been dragging their feet ever since. And I'm just wondering if there was an issue with Marvel being afraid to pull the trigger, and Edgar Wright got frustrated with that and finally was like, you know what? I'm done. I've wasted, you know, 3 years of my life on this project. I got other movies I can make.
You know, that's a viable theory.
Yeah. So I don't know what this means for the future of that project. Hopefully they continue on and find another director who can have the same vision he did and deliver a good product. But I think we all should keep our eyes on this, because I for one have been wanting to see this Ant-Man movie ever since I saw that test footage. So.
Yeah, I was the same way. I thought it was really brave. I was like, all right, way to find an interesting character that's not quite as well known and take it and really try to do something cool with it. I'm the same way. I really hope they pull it together and make something cool out of it.
Yeah. So you had mentioned earlier Spider-Man. Was he your favorite character always growing up, or?
Yeah, I have always had a special place for Spider-Man. I've always loved that character, and I've always loved those books. Even now, I still enjoy Spider-Man quite a bit and get frustrated when they throw terrible creative teams at him.
So how did you feel about... Sorry. How did you feel about the death replacement and then rebirth of Peter Parker?
Well... You know, this is probably going to sound really terrible from a lifelong fan, but there's a couple of story arcs, and that's one of them where I just kind of gloss over it, and I'm like, well, I don't really consider it part of the canon, it is what it is, but reading that and seeing what they did with it, the cynical side of me sees nothing more than the same kind of gimmick they tried to do when they killed Superman and did all that nonsense back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what better way to freshen someone up than to kill him? And then, of course, you can't frickin' kill Spider-Man, so let's go ahead and bring him on back. You know, I don't know. It's frustrating.
Yeah, no, it's funny, because I definitely agree with that mentality. You know, we had all the crazy storylines in the late 90s, like the Clone Saga and whatnot. And then it just feels like ever since maybe 2000, ever since Civil War, I want to say.
Yeah.
Everything's been a big arcing storyline. Everything's been a gimmick to tie things in and sell books. And this whole Spider-Man, Superior Spider-Man thing was just, you know, really bad. I mean, and I know diehard fans who were in love with the Superior Spider-Man book and were upset that Peter Parker was coming back, you know, and they were ending Superior Spider-Man, and it's like, really? And I just wasn't surprised for two reasons. Somebody we interviewed a while ago, we were talking about this when they first killed him off, and he had pointed out that, you know, these are properties. These aren't characters anymore. They're properties that
right.
belong to Marvel and DC, and they know... At the end of the day, the property is Peter Parker is Spider-Man. That's
exactly
what defines the property. So they'll do something like this. They'll remove him from the costume for a little bit, or they'll play a game where Doc Ock takes over his body But eventually it's going to come back to the original property. It always does. And then, and I thought about that and I'm like, it's true. I mean, it's happened time and time again. There's very rare cases where the person under the mask changed permanently. And, then we actually interviewed Jeff Sutter, who is the, senior art director over at Marvel. And, he had basically echoed that same sentiment, you know, like, yeah, Peter's, you know, it's all a property and it'll come back to it, you know, and he even asked us a question during the interview. He's like, how do you think, you know, if they were going to bring him back, how do you think they would do it? You know, so which was a big hint that yes, he's coming back, you know?
Right.
And, so it just, right. That's the thing with me is if they're going to do a stunt like this to sell books, when you eventually flip it back, it cheapens it.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're not going to keep the Doc Ock mind in Spider-Man forever, then why do it in the first place? You know, it's tough as a longtime Spider-Man fan to swallow it sometimes.
Well, and it's also, I'm getting a little bit outside of Spider-Man. It's one more symptom of a greater problem. I know when you really look back at what they've done over the last 15 years, has death really meant anything to any of these characters? No. They've pretty much set up, timelines and alternate dimensions where they can pretty much kill about anyone they want and bring them back just about any way they want. And it really takes the potency out of death. You know, to kill a character like Peter Parker and to truly kill him would have been something brave and huge and should have been one of the most monumentous occasions in the entire company's history. But, you know, just like we're saying, it was just one more thing to try to sell a few more books, and the story really suffers because of that.
Right. Yeah. No, it's funny because, last week we just did our Amazing Spider-Man 2 review. And, we, of course, have you seen Amazing Spider-Man 2?
I have not.
Oh. Well, then I don't want to ruin it for you.
Oh, the spoilers are all right. I was so cautious to go see it. I was just so afraid I was going to be disappointed with it.
Well, let me put it this way. It's not the greatest Spider-Man movie ever made, but for the effects and the spectacle of the movie, it is kind of good to see it on the big screen. But, you know, there are two characters, you know, in the Spider-Man mythos that have the distinction, and I think theirs is almost across all Marvel comics as well, not just Spider-Man, that have this distinction of being two characters who were pivotal main characters in his development, who died and have had the honor of staying dead.
Right.
And those being Captain Stacy and Gwen Stacy.
Yep.
You know, so it was no shock that she died in this movie. But that's the thing. It's like, you know, that's one of the things that kind of always made that those characters compelling and interesting as well, is that they stay dead.
No, that's true. And it's a rare thing.
I mean, if they ever really brought her back, it would really cheapen the character a lot, you know?
Well, I agree. I think it'd destroy 40 years of storylines and the emotional impact that it has on Peter Parker as a character. It'd just be ruined.
Yes, yes. And I hope they never go down that road. So I guess you're more of a Marvel than a DC guy, or?
I have always leaned towards Marvel. DC, for whatever reason, when I was young, there were just only a couple titles ever interested me, and I never really read much else. And that was pretty much the main ones that everyone else reads. Batman and Superman. What else is there, you know?
It's funny. I'm the same way, because it's like, you know, I would say I have a handful of oddball DC books like Lobo and a couple maybe Justice League books.
Sure.
But the majority of them are Superman and Batman. Yeah.
For me, honestly, I'm one of those people that DC for me starts with Vertigo. Okay. And I love the stuff they publish under that title, but most of their superhero stuff, I just always preferred the Marvel.
Actually, it's funny, the bulk of my Superman collection is from the appearance of Doomsday to the death of Superman, and then the rebirth storyline until he's back into the costume.
I'm right on. And then I know exactly that time period too, man. Boy, that was some big hype when all that was going on.
Yes, yes. And it's funny, because I have I have two copies of The Death of Superman just because I ended up getting pardon me, I ended up getting a second copy from someone that was a reprint, you know, like a fourth running. And, sure. But I had bought the original and it was in the poly bag. And my one friend's like, you're not going to open that, are you? And I'm like, of course. I want to read how he dies.
Right.
And I wasn't going to shell out for two books. And he was like, oh, okay. So yeah, I opened it. I read it. I mean, they're not worth much anyway, even in the bag nowadays. So.
No, it's funny though, because that does bring up an interesting time. You know, that particular comic, The Death of Superman in the Black Bag. Boy, there was a time when that thing first came out that printing, I mean, hot off the presses, there were people turning around and selling that thing for $300 or $400.
Yeah.
And that was back in the late '90s, you know, and or mid '90s, I guess. And
yeah.
Nowadays, I mean, what's one of those even worth anymore? I don't know, $30 or $40 maybe, something like that.
Maybe.
But it's funny how the perceived value of those things changed. They definitely created a buzz and cashed in on it at the time. And it's unfortunate that that's the way it was. I still feel like they did a disservice to Superman through that whole thing.
Yes. Yeah. No, they definitely did. And again, it cheapened his death because it wasn't even like 5 years before he came back. You know, it was within a year, you know, at least it felt that way. Maybe it was within a year and a half.
It was pretty quick.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any of the Funeral for a Friend books, but, you know, because I always thought that was kind of silly, too. Oh, you're going to continue Superman stories with, you know, but it just being a funeral?
Well, and then there were some of those, and I can't speak them for verbatim because it's been so long since I read them, but a lot of that Funeral for a Friend and some of those that came right after, there were literally, like, scenes of Superman, like, in the afterlife, you know? Like, wow. Even when he was dead, he was not gone, you know? It was inevitable that he was never going to be gone, and it was just like, you know, we just got duped. We just got duped for every one of these issues that we bought.
Yes, because I remember watching it on the news, and there was a rep from DC talking about it, and I don't remember who it was, and they said, they're like, well, right now we have no plans to bring him back, and if we do, it's going to be a long time from now, you know? And
yeah.
It's just like, no, they had that planned.
Yeah, exactly.
From the moment they put that issue out, they had, you know, because it's the thing too, you know, we know that these companies plan these storylines a year out, you know?
Yep, exactly. Trying to be like, oh, we don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, right. You got whole rooms full of people sitting around deciding what happens.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, I mean, I will say this for DC, you know, talking about stunts. With the new 52 stuff, yes, it was definitely another gimmick, you know, and most of the new 52 stuff I really can't get into, especially the whole Wonder Woman and Superman are now a couple, you know, screw 75 years of history with Lois Lane being his girlfriend, and now let's make it Wonder Woman because that's what the fans want. But I have to say the Scott Snyder Batman run, the Court of Owls, which is what kicked off the new 52, was really good. But what was really good about it is he had already written that story before they announced the relaunch. So it's written as if it's just a continuing continuing Batman story.
Right.
You know, so it was like, okay, that's well, why it's good.
And some of that new 52, they got me too. You know, I was real excited about a lot of that stuff. Dave Finch coming on doing Batman, you know, that was like a dream. So I checked out a bunch of that stuff, and I even got into a little bit of the Teen Titans, and it was just real quick it became apparent that there was just a little bit of a gimmick pushing behind this and not really much of a real artistic renaissance as I was kind of hoping it was going to be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, with the Superman Wonder Woman is the biggest symptom you can point to as, let's reboot the universe, but let's do everything the fans have always wanted so we can sell more books. Not, let's do what we've always wanted to do with the characters and make it more compelling and interesting to people.
Well, and I mean, we were talking a little bit earlier, too, about, you know, not wanting to commit to anything. And then, boy, they just some of the stuff they picked. But I thought this was a huge failed opportunity for DC. And I know they're selling more books than ever, and that's great for them. I'm glad people are digging it. But, you know, as far as the artists go, they brought on to kick off some of those New 52 some of the greatest artists and writers in the industry, and I feel like they all got choked and stifled in what they were allowed to do for those stories. And I feel like it comes through in those books.
Yeah, I definitely heard grumblings from some of the people working for DC that their hands got tied, you know, and they were even confused too, because like I think the Green Lantern books, the stories that had been established New 52, they were allowed to continue on what they were doing, but the people working on Superman had a whole new fresh start that they had to do, and yet it's like one, I think it was, if I remember correctly, the Action Comics and Man of Steel were new, but yet Superman was taking place, you know, 5 years in the future, so there wasn't like the reboot of him being Superman. It was confusing to a lot of people, you know, and the editorial staff was like, no, this is how we want it. This is, you know, we've got to do this. It makes sense to us. And it's like, yeah, but, you know.
Right.
you're going to lose fans based on this.
Well, and that's one of the things that's always been confusing about DC, even as people, you know, like us that love comic books and we get into backstories and universes and stuff, with how many alternate Earths and universes they keep going, you know, it's impossible to know. Essentially, you got to pick the one or two books that you like and read them as they come and take them for what they are, and then the rest of it's just a big jumbled web that no one can untangle. In fact, I think even some of those editors, they might say they know everything that's going on. There's just no way. Some of those things are just going off into the stratosphere, man.
Well, and that's one of those things, too, where it was like they had Infinite Crisis and Final Crisis, you know, and they said, yeah, we're doing this, like, we're doing these storylines. At both times, it was like, oh, the multiverse has gotten too confusing. We're resetting it back to a single verse. And you know, it's going to change the universe forever. And then they reboot, you know, and you kind of feel like when they did the reboot, okay, well, we'll get back to a single universe and we won't have all this confusing stuff. And then, oh no, now there's an Earth 3, and now there's an Earth 4, and now there's an Earth 5. And it's like, why are you doing this again?
Yep. It is. It's tough to follow, and it really the worst part of it is that it detracts from the stories. You know, when you have to sit there and figure out where and when you are, you're not concentrating on the human drama anymore. You know, you're not concentrating on the action and the fun.
Right. Yes. Not like in G-Raver, you know. Right. Single title, you know, great book. You know the guy is going after anomalies, and you're going to have a fun ride every issue.
Exactly, and you know that when someone dies, they're going to stay dead.
Yes, especially if they're a vampire or a demon.
Exactly.
Cool. So, you know, we've been talking for a little over an hour now. So, I think we're going to wrap it up. So where can people find you online?
The best place to find me is my Facebook, just Nicholas Wentland. And I also have a DeviantArt, Nightlance 1. But the Facebook is definitely the best. Literally, that's a direct line to me sitting right at my computer drawing.
Cool. Are you on the Twitter?
You know, I have a couple Twitters, and I so rarely ever use them, I wouldn't even give it out.
Okay, cool. So. And how about, do you know Brandon's or Eric's Twitter handles? Since, you know, we'll give them a little props.
Oh, you know, I honestly don't know either one of the Twitters. But I know both Brandon and Eric have pretty strong Facebook presence. That's where they do a lot of their PR, and they're both pretty readily available.
All right.
Brandon through Generation Dead and his own, and Eric through Broken Icon and Eric Watkins.
Cool. So, yeah, definitely go check those guys out. And again, this weekend, if you're not doing anything and you're in West Virginia, go to TriCon, check out that convention. Go up to the Broken Icon booth and say Superhero Speak sent you. And they're not going to give you anything, but it's nice to know you listen to the show. Well, maybe Nick will give you a handshake.
Absolutely.
There you go.
I tell you what, if you come over with a Superhero Speak name bomb, I'll give you a special sketch card.
There you go. Hey, win-win for everyone. Cool. So... On that note, ladies and gentlemen, As always, don't let your cape be caught in the door. Have a good week.
Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or, if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.
This episode of Superhero Speak was brought to you by Blueberry.com. Head on over to Blueberry.com and use the offer code Superhero Speak to get 1 month free on their hosting or premium statistic plans. That's Blueberry.com, BLUBRRY.com.